Product Breakfast Club.
Welcome to the Product Breakfast
Hello.
Club, everybody. I'm your host, Jake Knapp.
And I'm your other host, Jonathan Courtney, in sunny, sweaty Berlin.
Oh yeah, I'm in sunny San Francisco. It's not sweaty though. It's not that hot.
Oh, it's humid here, man. It is soaked. I'm soaked.
So you've been on vacation.
Oh, you've been on vacation.
Would you talk about it? Because I have another bite of my breakfast toast that I want to eat. And if you talk, it could kind of buy me some time.
Cool. So I just came back from 7 days in Spain.
Don't let the chewing sounds gross you out while you're talking.
Keep them in. So yeah, I was just on this little island, really beautiful, chilling in the sun, reading. I deleted all my social media apps. I put the podcast uploading on automatic mode, meaning I asked Jason to upload the podcast, which actually he's going to do from now on. So I already fixed a part of the bottleneck there that won't happen anymore. Yeah, I didn't check emails, didn't check anything related to AJ and Smart, just chilled completely. Read a lot and just kind of unplugged a little bit. And I think it was a really nice thing to do. Always makes me take a step back and think about the company and my life and all that kind of stuff. So it was good.
Oh, any big revelations? Do you want to share?
No, not really. I mean, not that I don't want to share them, but nothing major. It was more like I was just curious about what would break while I'm away. And since I've just been in the office for a couple of hours, I'm still not sure exactly what has broken. Although you did bring up something before we started the podcast, which kind of is something that didn't work while I was away. So yeah, there's always something. I mean, you try as the co-founder to remove yourself as the bottleneck, but it doesn't really work in a company of this size. So yeah, whatever. It was a really enjoyable week. Actually, two podcasts ago, I mentioned that I was reading a book series called Broken Earth. It's like a trilogy because you asked me, hey, what trilogy has ever had like the first book?
A good book two, a good book three. Yeah.
Exactly. So you say that like the books always get worse. I have to say the Broken Earth trilogy by a woman named N.K. Jemisin. I'm sorry if I'm saying your name wrong. Not that you're listening to this podcast.
I'm sure she is.
She is.
She certainly is. 100% chance. We're so sorry, N.K.
Yeah, N.K. Jemisin, Broken Earth trilogy. I have to say that book three of that was absolutely amazing. I was completely blown away by it. Really, really great.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Broken Earth trilogy? I mean, what is it? Science fiction? We were talking about science fiction. Is that what it is?
Yeah, I guess you could say it's science fiction, but it's one of those ones where it's like hard to put your finger on it exactly what it's about. It's basically my favorite type of science fiction or fantasy, where humans living on the Earth right now are kind of living on Earth after our current civilization has fallen. So they see...
Do you ever wonder if Game of Thrones is like that?
I do wonder about
or
that.
The Hobbit?
Not The Hobbit.
I think about that a lot when I'm trying to fall asleep at night. I'm like, what if this is just going to turn into Game of Thrones? It doesn't matter what I do.
It's like in the middle of The Hobbit, Frodo is there with his flute or whatever he does, and he finds an iPhone and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, that was so weird. People don't talk about that scene that much, but it's really weird.
And then he gets addicted to Instagram.
Yeah, it's so weird. And there's like a broken like Statue of Liberty is in the background. It's so weird.
It's super weird.
People never comment on that.
It's really one of my favorite genres. I don't even know what it is. It's like post-apocalyptic, but it's not really post-apocalyptic because the current people are like thriving or whatever. And there's also a great video game called Horizon Zero Dawn, which is basically the same thing. You're like a barbarian kind of Stone Age type person, but living amongst the dead civilization of the Earth when it got to its like highest technological point, which is really cool because you're kind of scavenging in these huge skyscrapers and it's just so cool. Anyway, the Broken Earth trilogy, really, really great. Great job, N.K. Jemisin. Really, really entertaining. And I assume that the rights of this have been bought for some sort of movie because it's really great. And yeah.
Well, that brings me to a topic.
Uh-oh.
Because we talked about Annihilation.
Yeah. Did you finish it?
I did finish it. It was so good. You were right about the ending.
Yes.
You know, I was not disappointed that the mysteries weren't completely resolved. And I did stop there. I did not read the next book because of your sage advice. I'm just thinking of it as a one book, a one-off. We talked about this. I think I sent you an angry email. Not angry at you, but angry at the situation. I was curious about the movie version of it. I didn't watch it, but I watched the trailer of the movie, and it looked horrible. It just looked so frustrating
so bad
to me because it didn't seem to follow the plot that closely. And as I was watching the trailer, and in the trailer, they really give a lot away about the plot. And I was like, what are they talking about? Like, what's going on? Why did they change? There's so many things that are different. And then I wanted to know what was up. So I searched for like stories about reviews about the movie. And I came across this one where they had interviewed the director. What's his name?
Oh, God. I had his name.
Alex Garland.
Alex Garland.
Garland, who directed Ex Machina and what else?
Yeah, he directed other cool stuff. I can't remember.
Okay. Well, anyway, they interviewed him and he only read the book once. And he wrote the screenplay from his memory of the feeling of what it was like to read the book.
God damn it, Alex.
I just feel like that's so wrong. I feel like that's so wrong because I'm thinking about how hard Jeff Vandermeer worked on writing the book. And then this Yahoo comes along and he reads the book once and he's like, oh, I've got the feeling of it now. I'm going to write a crap action. Oh, God, I got so mad because when I was reading Annihilation, I was like, this would make such a cool movie.
I mean, the book itself is so subtle, so strange. It's disturbing in every way. It's disturbing because you don't really know what's happening. And then the movie is just like full of really bad CG all the time. It's just so bad. I couldn't even believe it. I was just shocked watching it.
They're walking up to it and it's got this like shimmery wall of stuff.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? The whole thing is like, it's a mystery. How did we even get here? We don't even know where we are. No, we're literally walking through a CG wall of shimmer.
Yeah, it's so bad.
You know, I'm sure that Alex Garland is listening to the podcast.
He always does, yeah.
Dude, what were you thinking? Actually, I was reflecting on Ex Machina. I don't know if you say
Ex Machina. Is that your phone vibrating, by the way?
Yeah, it is.
Jake.
Sorry. I know. I'll put it on airplane mode. It's not very professional.
It's not a professional podcast here. Just chill.
I was thinking about Ex Machina, and I didn't like any of the characters in that movie. I liked the movie, but I didn't like the characters in the movie. And so that made me think that Alex Garland just doesn't understand human emotion. That was my conclusion of all of it. So
relating to Annihilation and also back to the Broken Earth and to the types of things I'm really, really, really into when it comes to stories and sci-fi and all of this kind of stuff, I asked you before the podcast if you had the chance to watch any of the announcements at E3. What did you say to me? What's E3?
Yeah, I said, what's E3? And then I felt a little silly because I do know what it is. But wait, one last thing about Alex Garland before we go
on. Oh, yeah.
This is classic, like, trying to do too much.
Right.
And this is a thing about innovation, actually. This is actually to tie it into the topic, sort of, supposedly the topic of this podcast about innovation. I feel like he had this great idea, this great material. And then he's like, well, I've got to innovate on it.
Yeah.
I'm going to come up with a bunch of new ideas. No. All you need to do is execute. Just execute. There's already a great screenplay to be had there. Just make the movie of the book. It's a short book. It's a great book. Just make the movie of the book. No. I'm going to make something special. I mean, I'm sure he made money on it. I'm sure he feels good about it. But it's not a classic. Nobody's ever going to remember that movie. A lot of people hate it.
Yeah, he was actually angry that the distribution company decided not to distribute it and just sold it to Netflix instead. So he was actually pretty pissed.
Good. You know what? I'm glad.
Yeah.
On the behalf of Jeff Vandermeer, I'm glad. The other thing that was annoying in the interview is he said, hey, people should watch my movie, should watch the movie multiple times so that you can pick up on all the symbolism I put in there. People should watch his movie multiple times and he wouldn't even read the book more than once. Okay, I'm done. And now I'm good and mad. So whatever this is going to be about, I'm going to be mad about it.
No, man, I'm just going to keep it simple. I'm going to keep it to the topic. So E3, for anybody who doesn't know, it's actually kind of the bringing to the end, like the current season of conferences that have been going on. So Google had their little conference, Microsoft had their conference, Apple had their conference, Facebook had their conference, and there was a couple of other small ones. But this week, and today, in fact, and yesterday and the day before, all the big video game companies had their biggest conferences of the year and their biggest announcements. And it's like, for me, it's kind of my favorite part of the year. It's my favorite of all the conferences. So Sony, Nintendo, and Microsoft, along with some of the bigger game publishers like EA, Ubisoft, and Bethesda, they all have their big conferences and kind of announce the different products and different games that are coming out. Usually, what's really interesting about it is that they show, here's what's coming out 5 years from now, and here's what's coming out this year, which is kind of something a little bit different from what the tech companies show. They generally either are super vague about when it's going to come out, like Google. Often Google announces things that just never come out or just are purely for PR purposes. Or they're like, it's coming out in September in an update. Whereas these game companies have these giant production schedules, which span like 5 years, and they have to keep people excited about them. But man, some amazing announcements over the last 2 days that have got me so excited. And I know there's a lot of people listening who are probably not interested in games at all, but if there's one
like
thing...
Yeah.
If you enjoyed Annihilation, if you enjoy this sort of creeping dread and like interesting sci-fi, after the show, you should definitely check out the trailers that have been released for a game called Death Stranding. It's a really unique video game designed and developed, or not developed, but the game director is a guy called Hideo Kojima. And he's like one of the most famous game directors in the world. He actually had like a huge fight and got fired from Konami, which was the publisher he was with for the last like million years. And now he's completely unshackled, making whatever he wants. And it's insanity.
Describe for the people like me who don't know or really care.
Dude.
How crazy is it?
It's insane. Like, okay, so you're, from what I can get, because it's a long-term announcement, it's an announcement of something that's coming out over the next 4 years. From what I can see, the main character is living in some sort of post-apocalyptic future, of course, because that's what I love. He's some sort of like delivery man, but he also has a baby, like a fetus in a jar,
okay,
attached to him, which he clips into himself every time he needs to see these sort of multi-dimensional beings. And if he dies, then this fetus can kind of bring him back
wow.
to life.
This is
but
not
also
normal.
There's another fetus like living inside him.
Wow.
And there's just like all these dead whales and crabs everywhere. It's insane. It's like a fever dream in a video game.
Wow.
And I just love that something like this is being made and millions are being poured into it.
Can you imagine working on something like that for 4 or 5 years? It's easy to imagine the guy, right?
Yeah.
The guy you were describing. He's like, yeah, I am way into fetuses and jars and dead whales and crabs. I have no problem signing up for 5 years of this. But
yeah.
Think about like the more recent hires there. They're like posting jobs. It's like, hey, good news. You get to work on Hideo's new game. And they're like, sweet. What's it about? And like, well, okay.
Fetus crabs.
Fetus crabs. And bear in mind, you will be working on this.
For 5 years,
yeah,
minimum.
For 5 years.
There was another cool announcement, The Last of Us Part 2. You should definitely check that out as well. Sometimes when I'm watching these announcements, I'm thinking, of course, from the design perspective of when we're working with companies on creating a relatively simple product, these things take longer than expected. These things go wrong. These things cause stress for people. But when you're making a video game or when you're making a movie, these kind of things are just completely insane. How is it that someone can bring these people together and get these things done? It just amazes me every time I'm playing one of these things and I'm just like, look at the detail in this. Look at the story, the amount of like insane work and coordination that goes into a project like this always blows me away. And I actually want to dig into that a little bit. Not today, not on this podcast, but I definitely want to get a couple of game directors, game designers on the show to ask them how they manage to pull these insane projects together. Really, it's nothing compared to making a digital product. It's like the magnitude of a billion more complicated.
Well, a big part of it must be the whoever's running it. So the director in the movie, whatever, like their ability to inspire people and get people
yeah.
committed to their vision of what the thing is. I just can't imagine signing up to work on any project for 5 years. It's so long.
It's a big commitment. And it's also like working in the games industry and in the film industry, which was my original industry that I was trying to get into. There's also a thing called crunch time, where it's just expected that in the last few months of working on the project that you're staying in the office until midnight every single night and on the weekends until the thing is done. And that's just normal practice.
Wow. And crunch time lasts for months.
Yeah, crunch time lasts for months. So if you speak
that's
to anybody
crazy.
Working at a company like Rockstar, for example, they make Grand Theft Auto and Red Dead Redemption. At least in the past, the crunch time was something they could see. So for example, I was talking to someone recently who was like, yeah, we just got an extra 3 months before we need to ship the game. And I was like, why aren't you happy about that? It's like, that's just an extra 3 months of crunch time now. It's not like we're going to now spread that time out and go home at a normal hour. We're still going to sleep in the office. We're still going to work on weekends. And it's crazy. The video game industry is just like, it's standard in a lot of places. And it's just expected that you work like this. We're lucky that people like Jason Fried in our industry is like, if you're getting a call at 7 p.m., your boss needs to be taken outside and whipped. In the games industry, it's like if you're not still in the office at 11 p.m. on a Sunday, then you're out of the industry. So it's crazy.
I am, you know, struggling to keep up with this video game conversation. Working hours is certainly something I can get mad about. But I do have a video game story. That's something that I can tell you.
Tell me.
I am, as I have probably mentioned many times because I'm so excited about it, I'm writing a science fiction book to do research for it because one facet of the book is that there's an old Nintendo game that figures into the book.
Oh.
I wanted to remind myself of what it was like to play the old Nintendo. And we used to have an old Nintendo, my wife and I did, but when we moved at some point, it disappeared. So I do have an old Nintendo DS.
Oh, yeah.
I did some searching online, and on Etsy, you could get a Game Boy Advance cartridge that somebody had like hacked and put 150 NES games on it. So the old Nintendo,
cool,
all onto one Game Boy Advance cartridge. So I bought that for like $18. And I was just thinking as I put it in and I played it, I was like, imagine if I could have seen the future when I was a kid. Now we would think Game Boy Advance or even Nintendo DS, it's like old. This has been out for years or nothing.
Yeah, disgusting.
I mean, and you don't remember because you weren't even born. You were like a fetus attached to a guy in a whale crab world. Because when the Nintendo came out, and I think this world is like this for kids, like the technology that exists when you're a kid, you're like, you don't have a sense of the technology is going to progress and change. We know that now. We're like, whatever we have now, there's going to be something better tomorrow. When I was a kid, when the Nintendo came out, you're just like, oh, wow, this is
it. Yeah, this is it.
I don't need anything else. This is amazing. And this is the way it's going to be forever. So if you had somehow told me, like, there's going to be a time in the future when you have a thing in your hand that has 150 games, you can play any game. Like, I always kind of wanted Double Dragon, but I could only afford to buy like one game a year, maybe. So like the idea of like, I've got 150 games. Oh, you've got Double Dragon. You want to play Double Dragon? It's just on here. You can play it. Crazy. So I had that little moment of how crazy that is. What is it going to be like in another 30 years? What are we going to be thinking about? I don't know.
It's exciting. I mean, that's the fun part. I'm not allowed to talk about any of the details here about this. Also, because I know this client listens to the podcast. Not that I would mention it, even if you didn't. But we're working on a gaming project at the moment for a client. I'm so, so pissed that I was on vacation. Like, that's one of the things where I'm like, I know I'm in the right job because every time I go on vacation, I'm super pissed about it because something fun is happening.
That is cool.
Yeah. And like two projects happened this week. One of them I can actually mention. Do you know the fasting app called Zero?
I know Mike, who's working on that.
Hey, exactly. So he was here last week working on that one.
Did he come to Berlin to work with you guys?
He was here. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. I was like super excited about working on that. But of course, then the schedules didn't work. And I was already annoyed about that. And then 2 days before my vacation, it's like I get a Slack message going around saying, hey, so this gaming project just got booked. If anyone wants to join the lightning demo session, because we do the lightning demos from the design sprint, usually the Friday before as a bit of a prep. I was so excited. The guys were just sitting there silently listening to me ramble for like 2 hours about all the different things about the gaming world. God damn it. I hate missing stuff like that. But it's just anybody listening to this podcast interested in gaming projects, call me right now. Pause the podcast. AJ and Smart will do it for you. Okay. Gaming. I'm in.
Mike Mazur.
I thought it was Mazur. Is it Mazur?
Actually, I like to say Mazur because it sounds cooler than Mazur.
Michael.
I think if he's listening and it is Mazur, he should consider pronouncing it Mazur. But anyway, Mike, who we're talking about, he's featured in the Sprint book.
Yeah.
He worked at Dig. He was kind of a high up at Dig. And then he worked at a gaming company. And then he started this company called Fitstar. And it was like a personal trainer on your iPhone or iPad. And Fitbit bought that company a little bit ago. Now he's starting something new. But when we did the sprint with him, it was really one of the most ambitious prototypes I had done in a sprint up to that point. And because we were building the iPhone app before the iPhone app had launched, we were trying to simulate the app is in the app store. I wanted to make it look like you could install it. The app has all these video clips. And so
was the iPad thing as well.
Yeah, yeah. And when we first did it, the first sprint we did with them, they didn't have all the video clips. They had some video clips of this football star, this NFL star in the US, who was the trainer, basically. To do those clips, it was like a big deal. They had to like schedule time with him and like film it and everything, right? So in order to do it in the sprint, we just like to fake it as best we can. We're going to have the clips with Tony, who's the real guy. And then we need some other clips to sort of describe how you use the thing. And we need somebody to be like the coach. So Mike was like, I'll be the coach. So he like put his baseball hat on backwards. And
nice.
He put on this like workout clothes and he was like, hey. And it's talking you through. And then his co-founder, this guy Dave, is the engineer, the CTO, is like Dr. Algo Rhythm.
Oh, God.
We bought a lab coat. He put on the lab coat and he's like, hey, I'm Dr. Algo Rhythm. It's like, here's how the tech works. Anyway, people did not respond so well to Dr. Algorithm, but the coach thing totally worked. Anyway,
yeah,
just a little color there, a little side anecdote.
No, it's cool. It's really cool.
To do an abrupt subject change here, we have not talked about your foresight. You are an oracle, a sage. You predicted what was going to happen, what Apple was going to announce. Then they announced it. And I'm curious what you thought of those announcements.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching WWDC while on vacation. Okay, I said I completely unplugged, but I did want to see WWDC and E3 still. And I was like waiting for them to start announcing it. And then they started announcing it. And I was telling my wife, I was like, look, I was fucking right. I told you.
I bet she was excited.
She was like, what? What are you talking about? I was like, the iOS 12, they're introducing the time, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, so she really didn't care, but I was excited. It was interesting because my prediction originally started because we were chatting about, like, should people be responsible with the time they use their apps, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
That was kind of in March. And then I said, yeah, well, Apple's totally going to do some OS level thing. Then Google beat them. And now Apple came out and kind of introduced their thing, which is extremely similar to Google's attempt at that, except that it definitely looks a tiny little bit more robust and maybe more realistic. Yeah, but I'm excited about that being a feature of iOS 12. It's all going in the right direction. But I really wonder now, as somebody who works on apps every day, and as someone who knows that one of the most important metrics of an app is usage and like how long an app is being used and how many times it's being opened, and engagement is usually the number one metric that our clients ask us to work on. So now that these companies are coming along and doing OS level, almost like engagement dampeners, attempts at reducing your engagement, I'm super curious, just even from if you look at a company like Facebook, of course they're going to adapt to this, right? Mark Zuckerberg's a smart guy. But if it happens that these OS level reducing your time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, things that give you back your attention, these companies are going to have to change how ad revenue is created within products just to work around it. And I'm wondering, does it mean that there's going to be less ad placements, that they're going to get more expensive? And what is the new paradigm of using digital products? I have no idea, but I'm kind of excited.
I don't think anybody has to worry about that just yet, because I don't believe that any of the features that Apple or Google announced is going to change behavior that much yet.
It's true. Yeah.
I always listen to our podcast afterwards to see how it sounded. So I had to listen to the Jake Lonely cast, which was trying to listen to all me talking for that.
Was I liked
sort of
it.
Being John Malkovich kind of a thing. In listening to it, I kind of got annoyed because something I didn't realize when I was just looking at the webpage, because I had this confirmation bias. Like I was so dialed into the screen time feature that I was like, oh, that's the thing that stood out to me. And when I listened to myself just like read through what was on the page, it was so buried. I mean, granted, I read them out of order. I read the iOS stuff last, but they were talking about like the speed bumps. They talked about the AR first. They talk about like all this other trivial stuff before they talked about screen time. And then when you get into what screen time is, it's even less than what Google was doing, which is kind of a mess. Ah, man. I mean, they really haven't done that much. And I do really think that both companies are very conflicted because everybody's happy to throw Facebook and Instagram under the bus with this stuff. No problem. Everybody's happy to do that. Google, Apple, no problem. Those companies go out of business tomorrow, they'll be fine. But, you know, Google's a little uncomfortable about YouTube. Apple's a little uncomfortable about games. And so they have a little bit of feeling about that. I think they're also, they don't want to invest a lot in this until they know that people are going to actually use it. So they're kind of saying like, hey, here's a little bit of a feature. Let's see if you'll use it. And what I hope will happen, I was also, my other reflection was that talking about Mac OS, I mean, the Mac came out in 1984, so it's however long ago that is, long time ago. They're down to this point where they're really fine tuning these like small features on it. If we imagine that this idea sticks around and they continue to fine tune and they make these features better and better, let's hope that happens. Then I think, yes, at some point, companies are going to have to rethink how they are successful and things like engagement, which is such a dumb metric. Engagement is dumb. It takes you so far away from why your product should exist.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's the headline here. Like engagement is stupid. If your metric is engagement, you are missing the boat. Stop working at your job.
Yeah.
He said, like, why does your company exist? Why do you go to work there? There's got to be something more meaningful for your customer and for you, for what you're trying to do, than making people sit around and burn time and just burn off their life watching, you know, staring at your app. So I hope that we get there, but it's not going to be until we get a lot closer to where macOS is and the tweaks they're making to macOS than this sort of like half-hearted beginning with the screen time stuff.
Yeah.
That's my monologue on that.
What's interesting, back to video games, is that the video game consoles have had this built in for a very long time. So since the Nintendo Wii, for example, if you would play it for more than 45 minutes in a row, the screen would just go white and it would say, why don't you take a break? And this was an interesting thing that you actually had to manually turn off. So it was automatically turned on.
Yeah.
And you had to turn that feature off. So you had to opt out and say, I don't want you to tell me this. But I think it was really interesting. Even the Nintendo Switch right now, Nintendo's newest console, has a separate app for also locking down the thing after you play it a certain amount of time.
How much does it lock it?
You can't use it at all. It's actually a parental control thing. So you can, of course, unlock it for yourself, but for your kids, they can't unlock it. Yeah. In my case, it's my wife. She's really addicted to Stardew Valley, man. It's got to be locked down. No, but really, it's like these things are built into video games, of course, because video games don't necessarily require engagement. You've bought it and it's done like a product.
Yeah.
However, with games as a service like Fortnite coming out, which are free, and they want you to actually now buy like small incremental in-game purchases all the time, engagement now has started seeping into the game world as well. So I think that's something that a lot of companies, they do want your eyeballs as long as possible. It's the same with Netflix, the same with all of these companies. And they're going to potentially think about a new metric at some point. And that's a little bit what Amazon is thinking about as well. Amazon is thinking about this post-screen, post-eyeball world with something like Alexa, where they're imagining, okay, what if we could remove you having to do these things with a screen and automate a lot of the daily tasks you have so that you really don't have to be distracted and you can get along with your life. Amazon is one of the few companies, I guess, because they don't have any right now apart from Amazon Prime Video. They don't care if you're using Amazon all day long on the app. They just want you to buy as much stuff as possible. So they might be a company to watch out for when it comes to building products that don't necessarily want your time and want to be used as efficiently as possible.
You know, one thing about that is that if you start to throw a wrench in the profitability of an engagement-focused product, then I think that if the expectation changes for whether you pay or not, let's hope that people get to a world where they're like, people are willing to pay for the products that they use. And I think part of the trouble that we're in right now is this expectation that things are going to be free. The things that cost money to make, that are expensive to build, are going to be free to the customer. Why are they free? Like, it doesn't make sense. We encountered this when we were working on the MakeTime app. I know you and I had a conversation about this, at least over email. We were talking about, should the app be free or should it be $2 or something? Before we had a developer, I was working with Tim and Rob and folks from AJ and Smart on the design of it.
Dirty T, by the way.
Yeah. And, you know, I thought, man, I think it'd be great if we just could charge money for the app because, you know, we can hire a developer and we can just tell the developer, like, basically, you take that money. That's yours. And in the end, we got a developer to sort of volunteer to do it, which is awesome and ends up giving us a great story. And so, oh, by the way, a little advertisement for Jason at Sidekick Digital in the UK, who's volunteered his team. Thank you so much. You're going to make this app actually happen by Sprint.
By Sprint.
But no, but seriously, like the reason was that we decided like, well, we have to do it free if we can, is because people's expectation is that apps are free. People are reluctant to try an app that's not free. And I mean, that's always going to be the case. People are always going to prefer free. Free is way better. It's more than incrementally better than the next cheapest option. But this expectation now is that we're going to give you something for free and then we're going to like get your eyeballs or whatever. Maybe the expectation needs to change. You know, maybe the expectation needs to be when you go to the app store that it says 30-day free trial and that's the new free and then you pay after that. I think we should be paying little bits of money more for the things that we spend time on so that we're a little bit more careful about it.
And there are companies like Cultured Code. Do you know the product called Things?
Yeah.
The to-do app called Things? Yeah. I'm personally completely in love with Things. I bought it full price for every device and you have to buy it individually like a really old school product for each device. It's crazy. You end up spending like in total around $100 to get it for iPad, iPhone, and Mac. But they really put a lot of effort into making sure this thing is as beautiful, as like simple as possible, not adding anything just for engagement into it, just for the sake of you using it.
And there's very clear. It's very clear what the business model is. You give them money, they give you something of value. And really, $100 for a finely crafted piece of software is a bargain, considering how much it costs to make software, considering how much you might pay for a pair of headphones or like a physical object that you know has money attached to it. We just expect software to be free. These services should not be free. We should be paying for them. And I hope we get to a world where it's more honest what the transaction is.
Yeah, the problem is that, okay, let's say we both brought out the same app. You brought out the $2 version. I brought out the free version. Now let's say I got 100 million people using it. And because of the friction of the price on your one, maybe you only got like 50,000 people using it. My 100 million, generally how it's seen by investors, how it's seen by the market, now my app is worth more than yours in terms of acquisition.
Totally. But over the longer term, I wonder if we've been talking about science fiction. If we imagine a science fiction future where this sense of like being in control of your attention really takes off and we really get very sophisticated about those tools and we really feel like we have the tools we need to set our intention for the things we care about, and all the software and entertainment and products in the world really wrap around our intention and what we want to do. So that's the magical future. If that happens, is there then like the market for those apps? Does it change? And do people feel like, the free app, if it's just trying to go for engagement, there's all these mechanisms in place to resist pure engagement? Maybe the market would change. I mean, you're right. You're so right. Like the power of free is so powerful. The barrier to getting people into a free app is so much lower. The value of a big audience is there. But again, like if you look forward like 10 or 20 years, the founders of WhatsApp just left Facebook, right? Because they were angry with Facebook about Facebook trying to monetize their giant user base. That's a huge example of a company paying a huge acquisition price for a product with a giant user base. But people expect that app to not be constantly monetized. They expect to kind of get free lunch with
it. Yeah.
So this expectation of free lunch, you know.
Yeah, it's funny to say that these WhatsApp guys, as if they didn't know why they were bought for $18 million.
What a shocker. You wanted to make money off of this?
What? I thought
$18 billion was just kind of because you thought it was cool.
The tech.
I thought it was for the white paper with little squiggly illustrations in it.
One good example of the free versus paid winning, again, back to the game world, because it's E3, let's keep within the theme. There's a game called PUBG, and this is like the Player Unknown Battlegrounds. In 2017, it was the most played, highest revenue online game. It came out of nowhere. It was like an indie developer. It was actually, I think it was like one guy at the start modding another game. And so this game is still huge today. But what happened was a company, they made a game called Fortnite. This game didn't do too well. So what they did is they decided to use the same pieces of material they had in Fortnite and used it to clone PUBG, exactly how PUBG looks. But they made it free, and it's now the biggest, most popular game in the entire world. And it's making more money than PUBG because of the small in-app purchases. So even as a business, it is more valuable than PUBG now. And the problem is PUBG, which is still a paid product, is suffering really badly because of this thing completely eating it up. So it is super difficult to compete with free, even though I don't necessarily agree with these practices as somebody who has to help companies to build out their digital businesses. I am trying to figure out like what is the best way to do this, but that also doesn't just ignore the fact that you can have a bigger market share and in the end, more revenue if you go free at the start. It's a tricky one.
It's tricky. I suspect free is here to stay.
Probably.
I don't think free is going anywhere.
When do physical products start going free, by the way? Like for me, for example, I'm super surprised that these video game companies, they still charge for the physical device.
Yeah.
I'm still surprised because it's obviously the software where they make all of their profit. I'm just wondering, like, when will Google just say the Pixel is for free?
Yeah. Or the Kindle? I mean, the Kindle seems like Amazon would be the first to do that because they're crazy. Yeah.
Honestly, if you just Amazon with all their money right now, I mean, the thing is they own the ebook market.
Yeah.
One of these companies, that's like the next thing, right? That's the next wave. Once the production of physical products gets easier and easier and easier and easier, companies with the money are going to come along and say, by the way, this thing is now free, and the only way we monetize you is if you use our services. Okay, let's go. I mean, I can totally imagine that happening.
Oh, totally. Especially with the Kindle, because what else are you going to do with a Kindle besides buy books on it?
Throw it at people?
We can throw it at people. Yeah. I'll take 200 Kindles, please.
Go throw it. I would like to throw this at people. I mean, for me, running AJ and Smart, we also do a lot of things for free that other agencies charge for. And the reason is because we want more market share and more attention. So I just don't want to come across as somebody who's against all the free stuff, because I do believe there is value in giving away free content.
No, there is. I'm talking about the science fiction future.
Science fiction
future where you know what your time costs and you know what free costs. Free has a cost.
This podcast is a fucking example. It's free.
Yeah.
And nobody knows why we're doing it. We could have some like dark, evil reasons that we're doing this podcast. We could have had a plan. We've been planning this for the last 2 years, and we're going to start monetizing
for
it.
For 5 years.
Yeah, 5 years.
We're going to do something really creepy.
Exactly. I mean, honestly, we will start at some point. We talked about our boot camps occasionally. So we do technically. Is that monetizing it? We're advertising our own stuff in here sometimes.
Yeah, it's tricky.
By Sprint.
It happens all the time. You don't even know. There's all these subliminal messages. For every time that you hear us say by Sprint, there's like 500 times in which by Sprint. It's just kind of whispered.
You see a spike. Every time we say by Sprint, you see a spike.
That's right.
You know what I realize is that because every week we have new people listening, probably a lot of people, whenever we say by Sprint, they just don't get what we're talking about at all.
What are you talking about?
Because it's like a lot of people also coming to listen to this podcast, they maybe don't know about the Design Sprint yet or something like that. And they're like, by Sprint? What are they talking about? What's happening?
Yeah. Well, we're not going to explain it in this episode.
Everyone owns Sprint. Go buy Sprint now. Use the discount code 7bysprint.com. You'll get 3 Sprint books arriving to your door within 20 minutes. For free.
Yeah. Maybe that could be the first product. The first hardware product is given away for free. Sprint book.
You know what? Jake, can I ask you a serious question? Would it not make sense for you to do a day, like one day in the next few months, where you somehow arrange with your publishers to give away Sprint for free for a couple of hours on a specific day and do like a big thing about it?
That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, because everyone who buys Sprint, it just increases the chances of you getting more money other ways.
Yeah, it increases the chance that they would want to hire me to do a talk or a workshop or something.
That's what I mean.
But I think the other thing is that it increases the chance that they'll read the book and then recommend it to somebody else. So
yeah,
if every book is worth more than one book sale, you actually do see something similar to this. Our publisher in the UK did Kindle sale. So for like, I don't know, a week or a month or something, Sprint was like $1.99 on the Kindle, which is very cheap. And you do see books go on sort of a Kindle sale with that same hypothesis that you're going to, you know, reach a new audience of people who now it becomes more of like a impulse buy. And then if they really like it, it's sort of an advertisement thing. I think it would make sense. I think it's a hard sale for publishers. I have proposed some things that a lot of times they're like, no.
No, they just shout by Sprint at you and you turn around and
then
walk
I go
away.
Buy it. They're so compelling that I'm like, okay, I'll go buy it.
Maybe let's finish up, but I have one book recommendation before I go. And it's like something that can help you with your life and your design career and all that kind of stuff. You might have read it before. It's called The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. Really great book.
I've heard of it, but I haven't read it.
Yeah, I kind of avoided reading it for a long time because I was like, oh, I'm so sick of people talking about stoicism all the time.
Yeah, me too. I'm like,
get over it, Silicon Valley.
It's sort of funny because I actually don't know that much about it. It's just that I've heard the word so many times that I'm just like, oh,
yeah.
I can't even learn what it is.
Yeah.
I know it has something to do with Greeks and like togas, but I don't even know. My uninformed take on Ryan Holiday is he seems to be the king of the clickbait self-help blog post. And then he's also written like a zillion books. Whenever I see a post on like Medium or somewhere online, it's like, oh man, that's like the best clickbait headline for self-improvement.
Yeah.
And then you click on it and it's like, it is well-written, but it's like the essence of like what all those writers on Medium, sometimes me included, are trying to do. Is that what he's like in the book? Is it very...
No. Not even slightly.
Does it feel more honest?
Yeah, it's really well researched, really deep. Basically, the point of it is that adversity, like bad things happening to you or things that don't go to plan, are going to happen to you no matter what. So having some sort of a system of dealing with these things is going to dramatically improve your life. It's even about finding ways to find opportunity in bad things happening. And I think that especially if you're running your own business, bad things happen kind of every day and you're trying to put out fires all the time. And sometimes it can feel like never ending stream of like, oh, why do I even do this? I was actually listening to it as an audiobook and I decided just to buy the physical copy so I could highlight some things. But for me, because some things didn't work out in AJ and Smart, I mentioned that like a few podcasts back. But even to me, sometimes I'm just like, yeah, you know what? That didn't work out, but it's good that it didn't work out because I learned this, this, and this, and this. But sometimes I have to be reminded about those things. And the book basically states that that's really how you separate people who are a lot of the time successful are people who are able to take adversity and take things that are not going well and deal with them, as opposed to people who just kind of crumple under that sort of pressure and just say, fuck, nothing's going to work. Some great case studies in there about how astronauts deal with adversity because they need to stay super calm and not go into a reactionary state when things are going wrong. And apparently, like, one of the biggest mistakes you can make when something is going wrong is just to jump into a reactionary state and try to fix things immediately because you might make it a lot worse and not find good opportunities.
You might blow up the spaceship.
You might blow up the spaceship, yeah. There's a really cool case study about Blitzkrieg. So like the World War II stuff and how the Americans dealt with basically the way the Germans brought all their tanks in one go and freaked everybody out and how the Americans kind of took advantage of them being really good at that. And just cool. Basically, the obstacle is the way. It's a good book. It's worth reading, even if you just read the first six chapters.
Okay.
Book recommendation done.
I'm reading the third Game of Thrones book right now.
Oh!
At your recommendation from the last podcast.
And?
So far, so good. I'm already staying up too late. I feel like a really good book is kind of like having the flu because I'm going to stay up too late. I'm going to not feel well until the book is over. And I have mixed feelings about getting into a good book, but yeah, so far so good.
Why do you have mixed feelings about getting into the flu?
Well, because I'm going to not physically feel as good while I'm reading a really good book, especially if it's long, if it makes me stay up late. I'm an old man. Oh. If I stay up late, I am going to feel it.
Is Jaime Lannister in this one?
Oh, yes.
It's Jaime Lannister and Brienne.
Don't tell me anything, but yeah, he's with Brienne.
Yeah, oh, this is so the best book. That's definitely my favorite one. The Brienne and Jaime story. I really love it.
I love Jaime Lannister. I mean, I'm only, yeah. I don't know where this goes, but he's just such a jerk. It's so great.
He's a douche. He's great in the TV show as well. He's just like a super sexy man. He looks like Prince Charming from a Disney movie, but he's also like a piece of shit, but you also love him. So like he does these horrible things where you're like, oh Jesus, oh God, what's that? And then you're like, but I love Jaime. I love me some Jaime. And with that, let's end the episode.
Let's end it right there on Jaime Lannister.
All where right. Can people find you on the intersquirt?
On Twitter at Jake K, and you can also find me at jakenapp.com.
Oh, it got redesigned, I saw. Very nice.
JakeNapp.com?
Oh, no, the sprintbook.com.
The sprintbook.com, yeah. I worked on that for a long time. If you want to go to the sprintbook.com, it's a little bit improved.
Can I ask you, what did you build it on?
It's Squarespace.
I can't use Squarespace. I try to like make my JonathanCourtney.com or something. Squarespace is not as intuitive as they make it out to be on all those podcasts.
No, it's not.
It's insane.
Yeah, it is not intuitive. If you listen to a podcast ad for Squarespace about Squarespace, any idiot could use it to make an image. It's so hard to use.
Fuck Squarespace. Oh, the only podcast you that have to, says fuck Squarespace.
Yeah. We'll tell it to you straight. Squarespace sucks. You basically, I've just over the, it's been a few years that I've been using it intermittently to make book websites and my website. You just have to learn what it can't do.
Like, oh
first,
my
you
God.
Have to learn it's like horrible rules. There's some things that it's just like, yeah, there's no way.
Your friend, our mutual friend, Kevin Rose, he told me, don't use Squarespace, use Wix.com. And I was like, oh, Wix.com, that's like something my mom would use. I went onto it. It had like the best onboarding I've ever seen in a
really?
Digital product. Honestly, it took me like 30 minutes and I already had something where I was like, you know what? That's a million times better than my Squarespace thing. So I canceled my Squarespace account. Actually, your product, breakfastclub.com, that's on Squarespace. And that took me like 2 hours and it's a piece of shit. I can't wait till Squarespace sponsors this podcast. But we should call this episode Fuck Squarespace. All right, you can find me on the Squarespace internet at JIcecream, which is Jice Cream. You can find me on Instagram or Twitter, but I really only use Instagram. See you next week, everybody. I hope you have a beautiful week.
See you next week.
Oh yeah, we have to sing.
We have to sing.